if you've joined us just now, two hostage takings are over, and we want to quickly review the news of the day, but also get to a question that's been provoked all week. The two brothers suspected of slaughtering 12 people at the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, Sharif and Saeed Kouachi, were killed in a shootout with French security forces outside the warehouse building where they'd hold up. Almost simultaneously, French security forces ended another standoff at a kosher market. They killed a third gunman who had taken hostages. Several of those hostages are reportedly dead. As this news continues to rock France, there's what we call a sidebar conversation going on among journalists and some of their followers. Should they publish Charlie Hebdo's most controversial cartoons, the ones that provoked not just this week's attacks, but previous attacks? Can you support Charlie Hebdo's right to publish them, say with the hashtag Je suis Charlie, I am Charlie, but not support them by republishing their work? Some major outlets, including the New York Times and the Associated Press, decided not to publish the most offensive cartoons. Others, including Slate and the Daily Beast, have published extensive galleries. NPR has published some of the covers, but none depicting the Prophet Muhammad. Those are the most objectionable to Muslims. Eric Wemple is media critic for The Washington Post. And Eric, as I just said, you know, there are those publishing, those not publishing. You've got both opinions right inside your own paper. The news section decided not to publish the images. The editorial pages did publish one. So start there. What kind of conversations went on there?
Well, you know, the thing is that I can't I'm a worker bee here, and I can't necessarily I can't at all speak for the leadership on those decisions.
Right.
It is clear, however, that the news side decided that in accordance sort of with the same decisions that a lot of mainstream media outlets have made, that they decided that they would not publish something that they deemed deliberately offensive to religions. And that is basically the same rationale advanced by the New York Times, the AP, and other outlets. This deliberately offensive language is what they use to pin it on. The editorial part of the Washington Post made a different decision, and Fred Hyatt was quoted in my blog as saying that he thinks that it helps readers understand what's going on. So, yeah, there's a newsworthiness question. There's a question of taste and offense. And it's a fascinating thing to see play out.
Well, and you've also just said something that might be news to some listeners. When things happen within news operations, the reporters have the same struggle that they would anywhere else to try to get to the story. Because, of course, if a story was just handed to you by leadership in a press release, let's say, or, you know, it's not reporting. So you now have to report this as is happening at other papers
right.
It's
right.
Interesting. And we do know, though, that the executive editor of your paper, The Post, Washington Post, told your colleague, Paul Farhi, that, as you said, the paper doesn't publish material that is pointedly, deliberately, or needlessly offensive to members of religious groups. And the executive editor of The Times told that paper's public editor, Margaret Sullivan, that ultimately there's a line between gratuitous insult and satire, and most of these cartoons are gratuitous insult. And you know, there are a lot of people saying, well, wait a second, how then, why then has there been such a rally to support something that is gratuitous insult?
Well, you see, the thing is that I disagree with those decisions and those rationales. And I think that, you know, this is a case where we are news organizations and we need to bring the news to people. And sometimes that entails trafficking in things that you might not like or that you might find offensive. But in order to explain the story, you have to know what you're talking about. If everybody made the same decision that the New York Times and the Washington Post news division made, why, then we wouldn't even know what we're talking about here.
Right?
Yeah. And so it's important to know what's going on here. Many times we as reporters traffic in quotes and images and other things that we don't agree with or that we find offensive. But that's the price of doing business in the real world. I don't agree with these decisions to not show these cartoons, these covers of Charlie Hebdo.
I think it's a mistake. Well, to the reasoning that came from both the New York Times and Jeff Zucker at CNN, you also had a response. They both said they were concerned about their journalists around the world. They were citing safety concerns as one reason not to publish these offensive pieces. And you wrote in your blog that, as compelling as that is, it boils down to a refusal to show the world as it is, which is what you've just said. And we came across that as well, we should say, and our own website, when people started posting some of the really more graphic, vulgar pictures. I don't even want to go into the details because they're so graphic and vulgar. And we came across the same kind of wrestling match. If you want to, it's tough because if you want to show to people, if you want to tell people that they're graphic and vulgar, sometimes that does not come across unless you see them.
No, that's correct. There's a reason why cartooning exists and why you have some people that write and some people that do cartoons. And there's a reason why cartoons and satire in this form has such an incredibly powerful message. And that is because good cartoonists are able to put something in the four corners of a very small space and make it really stand out and make people think. And that is what's going on here. There, you know, the AP, I believe, or the New York Times have all said this, you know, that we can describe these just as well. And that's just not true.
Well, Eric, what do you think, though, of a new movement that has recently started that we've noticed? There was the Je Suis Charlie. Mm-hmm. We are Charlie. We back Charlie. There's also been a new hashtag, Je ne suis pas Charlie. I am not Charlie, mm-hmm. from people who say, wait a second, I will condemn a brutal murder, but will I condone racism, xenophobia, intolerance, which is what I see in those cartoons, and I'm reading from somebody's tweet, never, je ne suis pas Charlie. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's an interesting – this is sort of backlash, and I think that that is one of the wonders of social media. I would just make the point here that with respect to the journalism on this tragedy, on this act of terrorism, that when news organizations put something in their paper or on the screen, that doesn't necessarily – it doesn't mean that they endorse that. It just means that that's a part of the story. And so you can actually condemn and point to something at the same time. It just so happens that this is such a critical and central part of the conversation now. I don't have any problem with the Je ne suis pas Charlie. I mean, that seems fairly reasonable. I mean, a lot of the stuff that they did, I suppose the argument could be made that it is deliberately offensive and, you know, and just awful. But what we're talking about here is attacks on free speech. And my point is that when you have free speech under attack, when it's under siege, the content is almost it's almost secondary or tertiary or quartiary. It just doesn't matter. You have to stick up for whatever it is those people were producing from in a perspective of free speech. And do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. And on that point, I want to mention another hashtag that began going around from Diab Abu Jaja. He's an Arab political activist. He's the one who started the Je suis Ahmed. Ahmed, the policeman who was killed as he begged for his life.
Right.
And he writes, I am not Charlie. I am Ahmed, the dead cop. Charlie ridiculed my faith and culture, and I died defending his right to do so. So again, that complicated, as you said, I don't support what they did, but I support their right to do so. Eric Wemple, media columnist for The Washington Post, provocative conversation. Thanks so much.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And quite a week. Lisa Mullins, thank you so much for being here to ride along on it with us.
Thank you, Robin.
Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. Jeremy Hobson is back on Monday. This is Here and Now.